The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
We're so glad you've stopped by. Welcome to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. Come indulge with us in the next hour as we explore a region of the world, its wine and spirits. We'll also talk about food, tours, and other amenities unique to this area. Sit back and enjoy. Now, here's Kimber Stonehouse.
Well, hello. Welcome back to Around the World in a Glass. Last week, because it was getting a little cooler here in Phoenix, and it kind of got hot over the weekend. I think it was 108 last Friday. I would not call that cooler. But anyway, last week, I kind of went over weird reds. You know, some of those off-the-beaten-path grape varietals that you got to search out a little more that really offer some great bang for your buck, some really good value, as well as just some really neat flavor profiles and neat things to neat aromas and neat countries to go kind of delve into. So we kind of talked about that. And so fair is fair. I really thought that perhaps we should delve into other weird whites and do part two and call it weird whites. Maybe you have already moved into your winter wardrobe as well as your winter beverage choices. My beverage choices, they change a little bit in the summer because it's awfully hot here, but I still drink my coffee incredibly hot, and I still drink hot tea in the summer. Maybe I'm one of the odd ones, but I still do those things. So I still drink whites all through the winter, partly because some of the food that you have at some of the holiday season is absolutely phenomenal with some of these weird whites. Your turkey is going to thrive with Gewürztraminer. All right, so I get really frustrated, and I've mentioned this to you before, when I go out to a great restaurant, or even an average restaurant. Maybe we're not talking great. We're just talking, you know, had dinner with my dad last night. We went to a local Mexican place. I didn't look at the wine list. I just looked at the beer list. It was Mexican food. And I got to be honest, most Mexican restaurants are not going to have a good wine list. But I got to be honest, one more time, most restaurants in that average price don't have a good wine list. That's not the target market, or they don't think that their servers can sell them. Or they just kind of focus on what's easy. You know, the brand names that you buy at the grocery store that customers are familiar with. They don't want to go too far off the beaten path because then they don't turn enough bottles or the bottle spoils with the first pour. Because, you know, it is about making money and not losing product. And at a restaurant, you have to make sure that more than one person a week is going to buy something. You have to make sure it's going to turn. And if you get too many things on a wine list, especially if they're too weird, a lot of people don't buy them. It's not quite like over at Sportsman's, we have about 75, 80 wines by the glass. But we also are known for that. We're a wine bar. We're known for that. And my entire team, myself included, of course, loves to sell the traditional stuff. But we really like to sell those off-the-beaten-path things like the weird reds that we talked about last week and today, weird whites. So anyway, back to my frustration at a restaurant. I look down at the wine list, and I want to have a white because what I'm going to order would go fantastic with the white wine, or it's just what I feel like drinking, because sometimes you just feel like a white wine. Sometimes a red wine's too heavy, and I'm just not that hungry. So if I drink the red, I don't actually need the food. So I look around at their list, and I see Chardonnay, and California Chardonnay at that. So it's heavily oaked and butter and cream, maybe not a Chablis in sight, so that it's kind of light. And then I see Sauvignon Blanc, and it's really tart and crisp, and they have mostly New Zealand, because that's, again, in their defense, that's what sells well. And then there's maybe a Riesling on there, but 9 times out of 10, that Riesling is going to be a sweet Riesling. 9 times out of 10, it'll be a sweet Riesling. That's not what I'm looking for. I was looking for something crisp and light, and that would go fantastic with the seafood or the cream sauce or whatever it is that I'm ordering, or my salad, something that's going to go well with what I'm eating. I want a crisp, light white. And, you know, you'd think with our wine lists, the way they look, that those are just really not easy found, or they don't make much of them. But there is a list of white wine grapes that just goes on forever. you've got Chenin Blanc and Gewürztraminer and Pinot Blanc. And Argentina does Torrontés that's absolutely amazing. And, you know, you look at those and you just look at those and you think, wow, where do I find those? And then the list goes on. You know, I've talked about Albarino and Viognier and Ruzon, Marzon, Colombard. Oh, my goodness. You know, you look at it and you're like, wow, I don't know how to find those. I don't know where those are. Well, I'm going to try to tell you how to find some of them and that you don't have to break the bank. Most of those grapes that I just mentioned are going to be about $15 or less a bottle. You will be amazed at their flavor profile. They're going to be crisp and light, and sometimes they're going to be oaked. And, you know, they're going to be a little bit of everything. So let's talk about their flavor profiles, because to me that's the coolest thing, and maybe a little bit of their history, kind of where they started and where the good ones really are. The first one I mentioned, I want to go back and talk about that dry Riesling real quick, because I think I talked about that one other time when we talked about Alsace and France. Those dry Rieslings, if you really want to experience something incredible, find a dry Riesling. How do you know if it's a dry Riesling on a wine list? I don't know. Actually, sometimes I don't know. And if I don't know, I ask the server. And then the server doesn't know. Trust me, it happens. It happens often. Is that a sweet Riesling or a drier style Riesling? I don't know. What, can you ask someone else? Or she goes, how about if I just bring you a taste? Okay, that's fine. You know, and sometimes it's just a really good quality, but it is still sweet. And I'll buy it anyway. So the dry Riesling thing, which is going to be wonderful, beautiful aromatics on the nose. Sometimes you'll get a little hint of petroleum. It's not a bad thing, but it's also going to have these wonderful fruit flavors. And then in your mouth, it's going to just have, what I love about them is their acidity along the jaw. They're going to be, you know, really rich and full in the mouth. And then they're going to have this acidity that hits you right where dill pickles hit you. And it's just like, wow. And that acidity makes us salivate, which means it goes well with your food. When you don't have enough acidity in your wine, The wine makes you salivate, which gets your body ready to process food and gets the digestive juices working. Then you eat some food and you drink some wine, and the wine creates more acidity so that your body is ready for more food. So it's a beautiful combination the way these work. And the wine actually does, in spite of the fact that we just like it because it tastes good or it gives us a buzz or whatever your reason is for drinking great wine, it actually aids in the digestive process as well, because it really keeps the balance going as you're eating your dinner. That's why we get so obsessed with food and wine pairings in the cork dork world that I live in. We get really obsessed about, ooh, is this a good pairing? Because when it's not a great pairing, or if it's not even a good pairing, the food is flattened by the wine, and the wine is flattened by the food. And that is not what you want. You don't want to destroy the flavors of both items because they don't match. Okay, and I've had it happen a lot. I had it happen recently at an event I went to, and they didn't match as well as they should have. And it's a frustration because you're like, but it should go better than this, you know, or the concept is right, but maybe the wine was wrong, or the concept was just not right. That kind of food doesn't go with that kind of wine, and it didn't quite work for you. You guessed, and it didn't quite work. And we all do that. We all fall short on occasion or another with our food and wine pairing. Sometimes I don't care. But I love to get the really great white to go with my meal. All right, so you go in and you see the Riesling on the list. And it says it's German. Okay, so now you know automatically this is a good opportunity. If it says it's California, I wouldn't even go there. If you're looking for a dry Riesling and it says California, skip it. Just, you know, because not because it's not going to be good, but because it's 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, it's not going to be dry. It's going to be sweet. That's what California is known for, is sweet Riesling. Sweet, overly sweet Riesling. All right. I can hear this question right now. How do I know if it's sweet or fruity? How do I know the difference? All right. I came up with an awesome way to describe the difference between a fruity white and a sugary or sweet white. Okay? Perfect. Now, sweet Riesling kind of falls in the steps because you can make it sweeter or drier. But here's the difference. Have you ever had a peach? Well, of course. I would assume most of you have had a peach. And it's sweet, right? But it's fruity. Now, have you had a dish of Fruit Loops? Those are sugary. The fruit part doesn't quite exist in Fruit Loops. All right, so that's the difference. That's probably the easiest way ever to describe it. A peach is fruity and sweet, but it's a natural sweetness, and it's just wonderful. It's not cloying. Fruit Loops, well, it's been a few years since I ate them, but I'm sure they haven't changed much. They're really sweet. I also think of Trix. That's another one. It's really sweet cereal. Those are sweet. The Cookie Crisp stuff that came out forever ago. Again, another very sweet cereal. Fruit, peaches, cherries, strawberries, they can be so fruity and so sweet, but it's a natural sweetness. So it's not overwhelming the palate with cloying and sugar. All right, so that's the difference between a fruity wine that has sweetness and then your, say, your Martini and Rossi Asti Spumanti that is, from my perspective, about 2 cups of sugar per bottle. You know, I don't like that kind of sweet. I like the fruity sweet, and that includes dessert wines that are fruity sweet and then some that are cloying. And part of that thing that breaks it up between cloying and fruity sweet is that acid that we talked about so much in our food and wine pairings earlier this month with Jillian. That acid is what brings the difference to the table. So I can have an incredibly sweet Sauternes or Tokaj from Hungary or even all of those things. I can have them be incredibly sweet. But if they've got that good acidity along the sides of your jaw, that keeps it from being cloying, and it actually makes it pair better with food too. All right, so this dry Riesling thing, it's German. Okay, hey, we are in the right direction. Now you look for the word cabinet, K-A-B-I-N-E-T-T, cabinet. Spelled a lot like the cabinet that you put your wine glasses in, only with a K and an extra T. And in the States, we say it that way. I think they have a slightly more elegant way to say it in Germany. But it's not French. It's not cabinet. Cabinet works. If it says that word on it, you are good to go. That's going to be a drier style Riesling. Cabinet means the first harvest time. So it means they were picked as soon as the grapes were ripe. Not early, just barely ripe. So the first grapes. And what they do in Germany is they go through and they pick the first ones when they ripen. And then 2 weeks later, they go through again and they pick those grapes again. Only the ripe ones. And then they go again. So, you know, they're not using a great big huge picker. They're picking these grapes by hand. The German wines are grown on incredible slopes and terraced vineyards, and they're extremely steep. And so they have to hand pick anyway. So now that gives them the chance to be more particular about which grapes they pick and when. So only the ones that are ripe are picked. But the first picking is called the cabinet. And that means you're going to get a dry style Riesling. It's still going to have plenty of fruit. Don't get me wrong. It's not going to taste like, you know, vinegar. It's going to taste with plenty of fruit and then that bracing acidity. And they are so amazing with food. If it says it's from Alsace, that northern region of France right up there next to Germany, I believe it's north, that region right next to Germany is called Alsace. And their Rieslings are also usually going to be a dry Riesling. So those are the ways to check and see if what you're probably ordering. First, it's in German. All right. I'm on a roll. And then it has the word cabinet. It has the word trocken, T-R-O-C-K-E-N, trocken. It means off dry. What in the world? Can't we just say if it's sweet or dry? Why do we have to have yet another term? That'd be my thought exactly. I completely agree with you. Off dry means it's really not dry. It's really not what we'd call sweet. It's somewhere in the middle. These are, again, an amazing wine, but they are going to have a little bit more sweetness on the palate. Not Fruit Loop sweet, but more fruit and more residual sugar. So a little bit more sweetness than a straight dry Riesling. All right, experiment and have some fun with that. One of my other favorite grapes that it's really hard to find, and in my personal opinion, I only buy them from France, and that is Chenin Blanc. Chenin Blanc. You might see it on the shelf sometimes from California. And so I was reading a little bit, because it is one of my favorites, about why it is that some of them, if they're from France, are amazing. And still only $15-$20. I mean, we're not talking an expensive wine here. They are amazing. And then others from pretty much everywhere else in the world, except South Africa. Let me throw in that caveat. South Africa does them well. They are just insipid and boring. What is going on here? You know, I have my opinions that some grapes grow better in their natural land, and Chenin Blanc originated in the Loire Valley in France, in Loire, where we also come up with Sancerre and a few other cool things. That's where Chenin Blanc originates, right there, in the Loire. All right, and then it kind of migrated. It was taken down to South Africa, and it's called Steen, S-T-E-E-N, in South Africa. So if you pick up a bottle of Steen from South Africa, it's Chenin Blanc, and I can guarantee you that if it's a decent brand and you didn't pay $2 for it, you paid $10, chances are it's going to be very good. Because outside of the Loire Valley, that's the only other place I'll drink Chenin Blanc or Steen from. I won't drink them from anywhere else. They mass produce the grape in almost all countries. So that comes down to what the reasoning behind it is. In the Loire Valley, it's extremely hard to get the Chenin Blanc to ripen. They limit how much it is, because if you water it and it's sunny, it grows and grows and just goes crazy making grapes. But there's not a lot of water in the Loire Valley. They don't get a ton of rain. And it doesn't have a ton of sunshine. You know, it's a little thin on sunshine in places in France because it's a little cooler where they grow these grapes. So it's not overly sunny. Say, like, California has lots of sunshine. And lots of, you know, even in the San Francisco area where it rains a lot and it's foggy a lot, that fog and that rain seem to be intermixed with enough sunshine that the grapes really ripen well there, especially when you get over to Napa Valley where they don't quite get as much rain, but they get the fog coming through to cool things off in the summer. So the Chenin Blanc, everywhere else in the world except the Loire and little bits of South Africa, is overproduced. I mean, the numbers they gave me when I was reading about it, I was stunned. They do like 40 hectoliters, all right, in the Loire of Chenin Blanc. Okay, that's a really small amount for no more acreage than they have, all right? They don't let it get out of control. Other places did like 60,000 hectares. All right, so they did the math for me, thank God, because I didn't know how to do that math. And it was like 140 hectoliters for the same amount of land compared to what they were doing in the Loire. Well, okay, you overproduce anything with water and sunshine. Think about it. Have you ever bought strawberries at the grocery store and they were watery? They had no strawberry flavor. I know I've done it with cantaloupe and a few other fruits, especially if you're buying them early in the season. You're trying to cheat and buy them in May when you know they don't ripen until like July, August, September. Tomatoes, same thing can happen sometimes. You know, they just don't have a lot of flavor. Well, what they did was they watered and watered and watered. Maybe they even used fake sunlight. But so they grew and they're big and they're beautiful. You know, you got this great, big, beautiful strawberry and you wash it and you take a bite out of it and you're like, wow, tastes like water. Pretty much tastes like nothing. Well, the same thing will happen with grapes. So if you're doing that in the vineyard, like they are sometimes with Chenin Blanc in everywhere but the Loire and South Africa, then what you get is really watery wine. And, you know, I don't like it. I want my wine to have texture and aromatics and acidity and balance and all the things I actually pay for when I spend my money on that wine. I want it to deliver to what I'm expecting. So Chenin Blanc, you can do Chenin Blanc as a dry wine, which is my favorite. But man, if they're not paying attention, the acidity will go off the deep end on you. So we have one on the bar right now called Champalou, but there's some others. Marc Bredif makes a fantastic one. Sauvignon makes a fantastic one. There's several brands out there that do it from the Loire. The ones that I like from South Africa, there's a couple of them. One of them is HMS Victorious. It's like $10 a bottle. It's usually on the shelf at the store. Good, clean, crisp. There's some others that are also more expensive that are, again, really good out of South Africa. It's one of the few grapes that I consistently like from South Africa. I'm kind of picky. And I don't think that's South Africa's fault. I think that's the Phoenix market. We just don't see a lot of good South African wine here. We see kind of the leftovers from all the bigger markets. And sometimes leftovers are, yeah, you got it, leftovers for a reason. So Chenin Blanc can also be done as a sparkling. So it can be done dry, which I like. I've never had one that's sweet. I've just never had the opportunity. We ordered one into the store, and they were all bottles that were bad. It hadn't been aged or stored properly, and we had to return them. So I've never had one that was sweet. I can only envision how incredible those would taste. I'm told that they, if you age them long enough, that they are an amazing dessert wine. And I can just, I get, you know, a little extra saliva in my mouth when I think about it because I can see its potential. I can almost taste its potential. I just haven't been there yet. And then they do them as sparkling. And they are so much fun as a sparkling. They've got more fruit. They kind of hit that palate that likes a Prosecco. So if you don't know what somebody likes, a sparkling Chenin Blanc is really cool. They go fantastic with food pairings. So if you're doing some weird dish, say you're doing some kind of cheese and artichoke appetizer, or you're doing something that's a little more common, like a smoked salmon and cream cheese kind of thing on a little baguette or something, a sparkling Chenin Blanc is going to be amazing. It's going to go well, even if you do some funky things like the artichokes and the salmon at the same time. it's going to be fantastic. It's going to balance both things. All right, we have a lot more white grapes, and I have rambled on too long about one of my favorites. So we're going to go to break, and then when we come back, we are going to hit some more of these amazing white grapes like Gewurz and Pinot Blanc and Torrontes, and then some really, really weird ones that Verdejo that you may have never heard. All right, we'll be right back.
News. Opinion.
Hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, welcome back. I got a little distracted talking about some of my favorite whites, obviously. Riesling and Chenin Blanc and all those amazing white grapes. All right, but we want to move on because I want to tell you about some that maybe you have never heard of or you don't know how to find on the shelf. Or, you know, they have 10 different names and no wonder you can't find them all the time. Gewurztraminer, one of my favorites. I've probably mentioned this one too before. But Gewurztraminer, also known as Traminer, in some places, used to be known, actually, it originates, they tell me, in, it originates actually in Italy. And it has moved, it's a little more now the domain mostly of Alsace in France, whether or not, they, like that or not. It seemed to be a little bit up for, grabs on the books that I read. That, you know, sometimes they get a little, they feel like it's their nemesis because they have to grow it for everybody. Germany doesn't grow much, even though it would thrive there. They don't grow much. Kind of likes a cool climate. Doesn't like it to be really, really hot. But Gewurz is amazing. It smells totally distinctive. The aromas alone, just, I mean, if they could make a candle that smelled like Gewurztraminer, I would have them all over my house. I love the aroma. It's got some lychee. It's got some spice. It's just, it's like, for me, when I put it in a glass, it's like heaven in a glass when I smell it. And, you know, no other wine aroma does that. I mean, there's others that I really like the way it smells. Or, oh, my God, this smells like Pinot, and I don't want to have it with salmon. But this smells so much like Pinot. You know, so I can recognize the grapes. But you hand me a glass of Gewurz, and I smell it, I'm like, oh, my God, this is so fantastic. I just love this aroma. So it's very, very distinctive. Nothing else smells like it. And if it's done well, keep in mind, that's a big if it's done well, nothing else out there is going to taste like it. It is phenomenal. If it's done sweet, it can still be good. So if it, you know, not like Fruit Loops, but if it's done sweet, it'll still be tasty. If it's done dry and done well, it's just going to knock your socks off. It is fantastic. It's probably my favorite grape varietal. If I really had to pin it down, it would be one of my favorites. Maybe my favorite to smell anyway, because I've had some that were really bad. You know, one that is surprisingly good, and usually I would tell you, you know what, only buy them from Alsace. You know how I am. I think that there's a region sometimes that something tastes best from. And Gewurz is that way most of the time. There's two I've had that are not from that region of France. Only two that I would buy again and that I have bought repeatedly. One of them It's from Italy. Kind of makes sense if the grape originated there, that there might be one or two in Italy that are still produced that are really fantastic. Italy doesn't really want to be known for this grape, but they do one called Tramin. T-R-A-M-I-N is the name of the winery. We've carried it at the store. Doesn't sell real quick except the fact that we all love it, so we keep bringing it back in and keep it on the shelf. And also because it's Gewürztraminer from a region that isn't Alsace. And, you know, that's just really special. It's a really good bottle of wine. I want to say it's $20-$25, so it's not cheap, but it's not outrageous. And it is bone dry. So you've got that good acidity, you've got that good fruitiness, but not sugar. It's just fantastic. And then it smells like lychee and all those wonderful aromas on the nose. So, and then it comes across the palate and it's full and rich, but, you know, glides across your palate with elegance and acidity. It's really fantastic. The other one is actually one that's done sweet. It is a California Gewürztraminer. I know. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to shock you. I should have let up a little bit better on that because, anyway, it is a California Gewürztraminer, and I think it's California. It's an American Gewürz. I think it bases most of it out of California. And it's done by Pacific Rim. That's right. You might even be able to occasionally find this one on your grocery store shelves. They make Pacific Rim, has the, I think, the Oriana lady on the front, the very beautiful woman, kind of with her legs crossed, sitting on the ground is what the logo looks like, and it's on a clear bottle, and then you've got the logo on it, and it's called Pacific Rim. I believe they used to be made a long, long time ago by Bonnie Doon, and they have sold off that portion of their wines that they made. So now they're bottled and labeled under the Pacific Rim logo, but they do a dry Riesling, and they do a sweet Riesling. The sweet's okay. It's going to be your extra sweet cloying. I don't care for the dry. It's okay. But the others I like better, the German ones and the Alsace ones. So, again, keeping with my usual profile that I like it better from its originating countries. So I don't dislike them, but they're not like the Gewürztraminer. The Gewürztraminer in that brand name, the Pacific Rim, they also do a Chenin Blanc. And it is not the French Chenin Blanc. Keep in mind everything we just talked about Chenin Blanc before you buy that particular Chenin Blanc, because it's just, it's going to be sweet. That's kind of their flavor profile of Pacific Rim. But that Gewürztraminer, it will knock your socks off. It's going to be sweet, though. So no surprises there. It is going to be sweet. But it is so good. I've had it I don't know how many times, and I will go back and buy it every time. It's less than $10 a bottle. At least I think it is. It's not much more than that if it's more than that. But it is an amazing Gewürztraminer for one that's grown outside of Alsace. Some of the other brands, you know, Trimbach does a wonderful job on everything they do. It's always a great place to start. It's just the basic level of Trimbach from Alsace, T-R-I-M-B-A-C-H. They're somewhat readily available. A little bit everywhere. They're fairly well known. Sometimes they show up on wine lists. So it's always a safe bet to pick a wine from Trimbach. They do. The ones that are most common here in the Phoenix market are the Gewürz, the Pinot Blanc, the Pinot Gris, and the Riesling. They do many, many others. That's just the very beginnings of what they do. But they do some inexpensive ones that are between $15 and $20 with those four grapes. Pinot Blanc. I just mentioned it. What is Pinot Blanc? Well, it's yet another knockoff from the Pinot Noir grape. Pinot Noir is known as the grape that continually reinvents itself. Okay, it is a grape that is constantly transforming into something else. It's one of the things that makes working with it so difficult is because the clones keep changing. They keep adapting or not to whatever they want to adapt to. So whether they're actually doing some Darwin and adapting to the environment or whether they're just being contrary and adapting to something that the winemaker doesn't want them to do, nobody really understands it. It is known as the grape that does that all the time. So Pinot Noir created Pinot Gris, which technically means Pinot Gray, whether you call it Pinot Gris or Pinot Grigio, same grape. And it is the gray version of Pinot Noir, which is the red version or the black version, depending on your definition of noir. We know it is a red grape, but it's really a black grape. So Pinot Gris is the gray version. Pinot Blanc, got any guesses? Yeah, you got it. It's the white version of Pinot. So you've got Pinot Blanc, meaning, you know, the white version. Pinot Gris, when we make it, is no longer gray. I mean, could you imagine buying a bottle of wine that's gray? How disgusting does that sound? It's white when we produce it. People take all that. Any types of the skins and stuff would not stay on it long enough to make it actually gray. Pinot Blanc has a different flavor, and if it's not done well, it becomes very, what I call, insipid, boring, not a whole lot going on there, just not good. It's just got nothing going on. You smell it and you're like, it smells all right, not a lot of aroma. Okay, so there's not a whole lot going on the palate. You don't get much fruit. You kind of just get alcohol, but not in a hot way. It's just like you're kind of drinking water with not a lot of flavor. only you paid too much for it to be water with not a lot of flavor. You know, you paid, $20-$30 for it, or $15 for it, and you're drinking overpriced water that just doesn't taste very good. So Pinot Blanc, there's a few brands that do it amazing. Again, Trimbach does a good job. There's a couple of other boutique-y ones from Allsauce that do a good job. There's one in the States coming out of Oregon that's hard to find because they don't make a lot of it. It's one of their secondary crops, and they do mostly Pinot Noir, but they do some Pinot Blanc and some Pinot Gris, and their Pinot Blanc is incredible, and it's Four Graces out of Willamette. In fact, we have a tasting with them this afternoon, I believe. But that is just an absolutely incredible bottle of wine for a Pinot Blanc. It's got a lot going on. It's really kind of cool. So that's Pinot Blanc. Torrontes, I mentioned it earlier. Torrontes is, I've been trying to find out, and maybe I just haven't looked in the right place yet, so if somebody has the answer, please feel free to email it to me. But Torrontes is an Argentine white wine. That's the only place I've seen it called Torrontes. So I don't know if it's a white wine grape. This is the problem I have. I don't know if it's a white wine grape with yet another name. So, you know, it's like Trebbiano in Italy, but they have it in Argentina and they call it Torrontes there, although they don't taste the same, so I don't think that's what it is. But the grape there, the Torrontes grape, is amazing. Kind of has almost a Viognier-ish kind of aromatics, because it'll be sometimes really floral and kind of, you're like, wow, kind of, you know, a little honeysuckle or hibiscus kind of aromas. But it's really dry and crisp and usually fairly light. Not real, real full-bodied, but it usually fairly light on the palate. They do them in a sparkling, and then they do them in a still. We almost always have one in the store, not in the store, sometimes two or three, because we quite like Torrontes. But I don't know that there's one on the bar right now, but we usually rotate them in and off the bar all the time because there are some really good ones. And again, because they're from Argentina, they just don't seem to command a huge price. They're, you know, $10 to $15 on the shelf. There's sometimes a little bit more than that, but most of them are going to be in that $10 to $15 mark. And they are so good. They just, and again, they go so well with food. So Torrontes, that's one to start looking for at your grocery store. Zolo, Z-O-L-O, they do a Malbec and a whole bunch of other things, but they do an amazingly good kind of entry-level price Torrontes, just one that's a really good one to start with and just kind of explore. All right, so Torrontes is an Argentine grape. What else is out there, do you think, of weird whites? Oh, there's a whole list. I haven't even begun to deal with all of them yet. Colombard. C-O-L-O-M-B-A-R-D, Colombard. Also known, if you're over in the Cognac region, as Uni Blanc. Okay, so Uni Blanc, at least I think that one's, Yeah, no, I think that's right. anyway, Colombard, Uni Blanc, they are, it's an amazing grape. It's just, you don't see it much. It's totally, really mass-produced. They're not going to be expensive. We've had two different ones in the store that have been really, really good. And, you know, over the summer we ran one of them at like $9 a bottle. I think it's back up to regular price now of like $10.50 or $11. But it's just a fantastic bottle of wine. Colombard, Uni Blanc, it's good acidity. It's a good light fruit. It's just what we call a quaffing wine or a pool wine or, you know, Tuesday night or Wednesday night. I like Wednesday wine. Wednesday wine works for me. I like a reason to go home and have wine with dinner, whether it's expensive or whether it's inexpensive. But I really like having inexpensive wine for just regular everyday drinking. It's just going to be, again, it's one of those light, crisp wines that you're just like, wow, I had no idea. Here's the trick, though. Colombard and Uni Blanc, it's not going to say it on the label. You just have to figure it out. Most of the time, it's not going to be on the label. Domaine Dupuy is one of them that does an amazing job with Colombard and Uni Blanc. We carry that one in the store. Domaine de Tariquette, T-A-R-I-Q-U-E-T. These are both out of a really boutique-y portfolio called the Robert Ketcher portfolio. They're going to be a little harder to find. Again, that's why they're weird whites. They're just hard to find. A lot of places won't carry those. They're inexpensive. I don't know why people don't pour them by the glass, because they would go fantastic with sushi or with your Mexican food, especially if you eat chicken or fish or something spicy, because they have a lot of fruit with them, so they're going to go really well. A few weeks ago when we talked about food and wine pairings, we talked about those amazing things that you could put with spicy foods, and Gewürz, Riesling, even Uni Blanc or Colombard would go well with that, because they have so much fruit going on. One of the ones that I don't like, so forgive me if I don't sound as passionate as I usually do. Two of them are Marzon and Rouzon. So Marzon and Rouzon are grapes that I can't decide which one it is I don't like. Because occasionally I'll have Ruz on, and I don't like it. Occasionally, I'll have Mars on, and I don't like it. So I don't know which one it is that I really don't like, or if it's just flat both of them, or if it's the way they process them, because they often heavily oak Marzon and Ruzon. So if they're oaking Marzon and Ruzon, that might be why I don't like them as well. They're just too rich. I don't get a lot of the distinguishing grapes. And I tell people that, and they're just like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding. How could you not like Marzon and Ruzon? And I'm like, well, I don't. I just haven't found one that knocked my socks off. I'm waiting. I keep trying them because I keep hoping. But sometimes, you know, you just have a grape you don't love. Now, if somebody's pouring it and, you know, it's the one they picked for dinner and it goes fantastic with the food, well, of course, I'm going to drink it. I'm not going to be rude. I don't hate it that much. There are one or two things that I dislike enough to not, to just really sip politely and not partake so much. But I wouldn't be that way with Marzon Ruzon. I probably wouldn't drink much, though. But I just don't like the grape. It comes across for me personally, okay, because I'm told this is not accurate, but for me personally, it comes across with no fruit, heavy oak or cream, like popcorn, or creaminess like lactose, like milk, you know, and I'm not thrilled. And the aromatics on it just don't ever impress me. So when I smell it, I don't go, oh, my God, I can't wait to try this. This is going to really taste good. I go, eh. This doesn't smell all that. I don't think this is all that. So it's really hard for me to describe it because I don't care for it. There are, now, I got to be honest with you, probably my entire team would disagree with me. I think there's a couple of them that absolutely love Marzon and Ruzon and their complexity and their earthiness and all those kinds of things. And I guess, I keep trying. They are off the beaten path. They originated in the Rhone region of France. They come from that region. They, along with Viognier, are in that northern Rhone area. The most of them that I have tried have come from there. There are some being grown in California that I've tried. There's some grown in Australia that I've tried. So they're trying to grow them in other regions, but that's where they originate. And yes, I have had them from France. That's the majority of the ones I've had have been from France. And I'm just not... I just haven't had one yet that I'm willing to write home about. When that changes, I will let you know that, oh, my gosh, I had this Marzon Ruzon that I thought was amazing. And because I've just not yet. I've had some Viogniers that I thought were incredible, some from France and one or two from the States. Klein, that huge winery over in California, Klein, C-L-I-N-E, they do an amazing little Viognier. It had, I don't know if it still does, a bright orange label on it, and it was just Klein Viognier, and it was like, I don't know, $9 a bottle. It is fantastic. It's a Viognier that I could drink a lot of. I'm picky on Viognier because, again, they can be heavily oaked, and then they start to crash with my food, or they're just too heavy. My goal for a glass of wine, whether it's red or white or bubbles, is that I don't have to stop after I've had about 4 ounces. If I want to have a second glass, and it's always an if. Sometimes I want to drink something different. If I want to have a second glass, I can have a second glass. Some wines are so rich for my palate that after I drink one glass, okay, I'm done. I need to move on to something different. And sometimes it needs to be beer or fizzy water or, you know, a glass of scotch, perhaps a glass of scotch. You know, because I do like my scotch. But I don't want my wine to be so rich that it either takes the place of my meal or I only drink one glass with my meal. I feel the same way about my beer. I love a dark, rich porter, stout, that kind of thing. I really like Guinness. But if I drink a Guinness, I might as well not eat dinner because it's too rich. I'm going to have to go really light with my dinner or eat dinner and then have a Guinness. The same with some of the other beers I like because they are so rich. But I feel the same way about my wine. I want it to be a little lighter. I don't want to have the oak and the richness to it. And Marzon and Ruzon just haven't done it. Please email me the one to try if you've got one that will knock my socks off. I would love to try a really fantastic Marzon or Ruzon that I think is amazing. I keep trying. One of my other favorite grapes that we're running out of time like we always do. I've still got another segment left, but I know how this happens. One of my other grapes that I really like, and I've mentioned it before, is Albarino. It's usually from Rías Baixas, which is a northern coastal area of Spain, kind of up on the little bitty corner up there. And it is amazing. I like it because sometimes it's got a little hint of oak. So it's just got a little roundness in the mouth from that oak. It's got some bracing acidity. It's got wonderful, rich complexity in the mouth and beautiful aromas. You smell it and you're just like, oh, yeah, this is going to taste good. And it goes with so many foods. So if you've got somebody who's a white wine drinker and you're trying to move them from their Pinot Gris or from their heavy Chardonnay, sometimes Albarino is a nice step for either one of those people because it's not too acidic, but yet it gives you all the aromas you want to do for the Pinot Gris fan, but it's round enough and rich enough in the mouth that the person who likes the heavy Chardonnay, it's an easier step than some others. Sometimes that step to a Sauvignon Blanc or a Sancerre, you know, that crispness is just too big. We've still got more grapes. Believe it or not, there are still more weird whites out there. I have told you about all kinds of them today, and we've got a bunch more. So we're going to do a few more when we come back. Be right back.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
When you look at something that's been designed, whether it's clothing, architecture, or a work of art, do you stop and wonder about the inspiration and thought process that went into the design? Tune in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schappa. We'll take the mystery out of the creation process, along with revealing the backstory from art to fashion to travel and so much more. Listen to Dishing the Dirt on Design every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Tune in every week for Sex Out Loud. Host Tristan Taramino will discuss everything from sexual pleasure to sexual politics. Get an insider's perspective from leaders in the adult film industry, the LGBT community, and the sex-positive world. From kink to non-monogamy, nothing is off-limits. Plus, you can call in to join the conversation. Sex Out Loud airs every Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
A divorce can break your heart, but it doesn't have to break the bank or ruin your life. Join Lori Grover for A Divorce You Can Live With and discover the benefits divorce mediation offers over aggressive dueling attorneys. Lori and her guests will show you how you can make your divorce faster, healthier, and much less expensive. She'll also be sharing the ways she helps couples settle money and parenting issues fairly, and the pitfalls of using the legal system to wage financial and emotional war. A Divorce You Can Live With airs live every Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's, with your host, Kimber Stonehouse. If you have a question for one of our upcoming programs, please send an email to aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. That's aroundtheworldinaglass@hotmail.com. Now, back to our show.
All righty. So we were talking a little bit about Albarino and yet another one of my favorites. Albarino is a little more easily found on a wine list. It's getting some really good reviews. The world, or at least the United States part of the world, has started really paying attention to Spanish wines and Riojas. And with that, they've started to explore Spanish whites, and specifically Albarino has really made some great strides. So there's times I go into an average restaurant, you know, not the high-end ones, but then the average restaurant. And by average, what am I talking about for price? I'm talking about $10 or less per entree. So a sit-down place, they come take your order, and it's going to be $8.95, $9.95, $6.95, you know, somewhere in that ballpark. And then if you order coffee and tea and stuff like that. So, you know, two people could eat for under $30, including tip. That's what I'm talking about for, like, an average restaurant. I think that's a fair price. The high-end things are going to be where your entrees are running upwards of $15 a person. So your entree with no appetizers and stuff is going to cost you $15, and then cocktails and things might be as much as $10 if they're using an actual good mixologist. Glasses of wine would be 8 to 10, and then bottles would be whatever, depending on their cellar. But an average dinner place might have an Albarino on the list. They've become a little bit more popular. Like I said, they're a great transition. If you're a big, heavy, rich Chardonnay drinker, maybe you're getting a little bored with that. You're looking for something different, but when you try Burgundy, it doesn't quite cut it. Or it tastes too much like what you're trying to move away from. And Chablis is just too too darn minerally and tart. You know, it's got too much acidity and you just don't like it. You're looking for something different. Sometimes a sidestep is Albarino. One of my favorite things to do in the store is to have somebody come in and tell me they are a red wine only drinker. And it's 115 outside, people. Red wine only. Doesn't matter what time of year. I'm like, well, what have you tried for whites? Chardonnay, Riesling. And I don't like Sauvignon Blanc because it's too tart. It's too acidic. Okay, well, have you tried Albarino? Have you tried Gewurztraminer? Have you tried Verdejo? Have you tried, you know, and the answer is always no to all these questions. And it just, it makes me smile because it also gives me the opportunity to educate and to say, hey, you know what? Just try this. If you're thinking a little lighter because it's hot outside, just try this and tell me what you think. You know, I've done it with many, many people, and all of a sudden, they're into Sancerre, and they didn't even like Sauvignon Blanc when they walked in the door. Or they haven't drank a glass of white wine in, you know, 5 years since they gave up, you know, their Chardonnay that they drank religiously when they first started drinking wine, or their white Zin, whatever it was they started out with. Everybody's a little different. And then they moved into reds, and they never looked back. Well, sometimes that's because you didn't have enough choices. And the one choice that's there that you constantly see is a heavy California-style Chardonnay, or its direct opposite of being a Chablis, still the Chardonnay grape, but, you know, flinty and minerally and really great acid. Those two things are so far apart, we kind of need something in the middle to help us out to you know, figure out what it is we really like. And Albarino kind of fits some of those profiles. It's going to be rounder and richer, a little bit toward the Chardonnay, no oak, not usually any oak, but you know, it's going to move a little bit more toward the Chardonnay side with the richness of it, but yet it's still going to have a lot of good fruit. So it's kind of like a really cool one to start with. And we've got a couple in the store that I just love. It's a nice way to bridge it. And, you know, find, if you don't live in the Phoenix market, then find a cute little wine bar that offers a lot of things by the glass and isn't afraid to pour the boutique stuff. You know, maybe they'll offer flights. I know there's some places doing beer like this elsewhere, and I know there's got to be wine bars elsewhere that do this. They'll offer, you know, some flights, or you can go in and order things by the half glass and order three or four whites to taste that are not Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, or a sweet Riesling. Or, you know, and another one of my not-so-favorite grapes is Pinot Gris. We talked about it a little bit today, Pinot Gris, Pinot Grigio. I get a lot of bitterness on the back palate with Pinot Grigio. There's a ton of people who love it, so I have to be the odd one out. So no bashing on the Pinot Gris grape. I just know it doesn't hit my palate. But, you know, go in and have them pour you three or four things. But I would avoid Pinot Gris or Grigio, Sauvignon Blanc, Riesling, sweet Riesling for sure, and Chardonnay. Move yourself out of that realm and see what else is out there. I just think you're going to really be thrilled, especially if you're a white wine fan, at all the options that are out here. If you're a red wine fan, you might find that you might have to start drinking a little more white wine. It's what I found. I mean, when I started years ago in the beverage industry, I was a red wine only person, and I stayed that way for probably a good 2 or 3 years. I tasted all the other things because it was very important for my career in the beverage industry, but I didn't buy them. I bought red wine, and I took red wine home, and that was it. I delved into rosé and thought they were incredible. So rosé was amazing. So I bought red wine and I bought European dry, bone-style dry rosé. You know, that's amazing wine we've talked about before where there's not a lot of sugar. We're not talking the sweet white Zin or white Merlot or white Cab. We're talking bone dry rosé, the style that comes out of Europe. And then several people in California do it very well and Oregon and Washington. That was all I would drink. And then all of a sudden, because of being in the industry, I get to taste all these other grapes. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Verdejo. Wow. Verdejo is amazing. We've got one on the bar. I believe it's by Pampano. It's called Inspiración. It's a lovely French Verdejo, Spanish Verdejo. And it is fantastic. You put it in your mouth and it's got all this fruit and all this acidity and it's just light and crisp and it just makes you want to have some cheese. It makes you want to have a little Manchego from Spain and some really great bread. And it just, you know, it wants you to put that all together. And it just encourages you to enjoy the wine, not to sit and overanalyze, but just to enjoy it. And, oh, my goodness, that was so light and so beautiful. Let me have a little bit more. Now, it's not thin. When I say a wine is light and crisp, I don't mean it's thin or watery, because that is not what I am looking for. I don't pay 10 or 8 or $30 a bottle for something to be watery. I don't drink watery coffee either, by the way. It's strong stuff. I want it to have a good, rich flavor. So it's going to be light on the weight. It's going to be light and elegant, but it's not going to be thin or watery. Keep that in mind. All right, so those are some more grapes to try. Now, one of them, when I was reading for this and just doing a little bit of research, one of them was the Muscat, all right? Muscat. And, you know, you're like, oh, I'm sure I've had Muscat before. Well, you have. It has a list. In one of the books I was looking at, it had a list of, I bet, 25 different names. It's one of the oldest grapes in existence. It started in, like, that region of Greece area and Italy. In Italy, it's known as Moscato d'Asti, Moscato de whatever. So we have talked about this grape before. Tends to be made into a sweeter style wine with or without fizz. Grows pretty much all over the world and with pretty much that many names. I have never seen any wine have this many names in all my life. No wonder we get confused, right? As people in the industry and people trying to figure out about wine, no wonder we get confused. I mean, it's called Muscat Blanc, Muscat de Frontignac, Muscat d'Alsace, Frontignac, I can't even say that one very well, Muscatel, Moscato Bianco, Moscato d'Asti, Moscato di Canelli, Moscato Bianco again. I mean, it just keeps going on. And then you get into the German names that none of us can say very well. I was just stunned at how many names this wine had. I had no idea. So the way the book starts out is the best way to give you some importance of this grape is to give you its synonyms, all the names that are synonymous with it. I just thought that was kind of hilarious. And then I get people who come in and they're like, oh, no, I don't like sweet. And I'm like, oh, but you're so missing out because Moscato d'Asti is probably one of the best sweet wines I've ever had that doesn't cost $100 a bottle. Some of the others that I've had are very, very good, but they're in that $65 to $100 a bottle or more price range. Moscato d'Asti runs you about $15, and you get fizz with it. So how could it not be good? It's got sweet, it's got peaches, it's got fizz, and it doesn't cost a fortune. To me, it's kind of like the perfect sweet wine to sit and enjoy, whether it's with a spinach salad or whether it's just sitting at the pool drinking good wine, or whether it's with dessert, because it actually goes quite well with custards and cream desserts. It's very, very good. It was just really, really old grape. It comes up out of, well, everywhere apparently. But it started in Greece and Italy and then kind of migrated to everybody else. I guess it has a bunch of different skin colors and all that kind of thing, which I just thought that was fascinating to see that there was a grape that had that many names. And no wonder we get confused, because even in the wine industry, I didn't know some of those names applied to Muscat. Like I was telling you last week with our weird reds, I had no idea that Dolcetto in the United States was called Charbono. We have a Charbono on the wine bar right now. I had no idea. I haven't found anything that disputed that, by the way. I have kept looking, and I have mentioned it to a few other people to see if they knew that in the wine industry. And so far, they were just as surprised as I was. So I'm going to keep researching that, and I will let you know if I find out that I was misinformed. But I was just really surprised. So there's a reason this is confusing. Every country takes the grape and redoes it and changes things around and calls it by their own little pet name, or every region wants to call it different. I mean, you know, some of those names, there's about five names there on the Muscat grape, and they're all in Italy. Why? Are you kidding me? You know, and we've seen that a lot. When people study Italian wine in the industry, they get really frustrated, because it's kind of like sometimes driving down the street and the street has like four different names depending on how many miles you drive it. Sometimes it goes for 3 or 4 miles and it's called this, and you cross a certain street and now it's called something completely different. Well, to people that live there, it's no big deal. Here in Phoenix, it doesn't matter that Glendale becomes Lincoln Avenue. You know, that Glendale and Lincoln are the same street. You just know that it happens. To people trying to navigate here that haven't lived here, that's a bit of a trick, trying to make sure that you catch all those. Another grape that I'm going to mention, because it has some significance here in the Arizona market, is Malvasia, M-A-L-V-A-S-I-A. Now, I have also heard that called Malvasia, so I don't know which one is right. And again, everybody has their own opinion, but nobody has an actual answer for me. So Malvasia, I hear it said when it's referred to being grown here, and I have also heard it said Malvasia from other countries. Again, it started together with the Muscat grape, with all its 5 million names, in Asia Minor. Okay, Asia Minor. When we're calling it Asia Minor, that was a long, long time ago. It moved into Greece and to Crete and, of course, into Italy and I'm sure everywhere else in Europe. And eventually it made its way over to California, and eventually it's made its way into the Arizona market. Page Springs, at I believe in Cochise County, has a Malvasia, is how they often say it, a Malvasia, which is a white, one of those weird whites, and it is really good. It's hard to find because they don't make a ton of it, and with anything else in Arizona, you know they can't make a ton of it because between the too much sun and not enough water, kind of the opposites of Chenin Blanc, too much sun, way too much sun, and not nearly enough water, the grapes have a hard way to go here. And they're getting some really good wines coming out of the Arizona market, but the Malvasia from Page Springs is definitely one to try and find, being poured by the glass or something somewhere. I don't believe we have it on the shelf right now. So that grape has been migrating since it was called Asia Minor, which you know means it's at least 2,000 years old, if not longer than that. But it is really good. It's a fun little white grape, not complex, but not too simple. It's really quite good. Next week, we are going to do something a little different. Oh, I have to give you my tip for traveling with your wine. I was talking to a friend yesterday. This is going to go really quick, and then I'll tell you about next week. And I'm getting ready to do some traveling in the next week or so, and I was trying to figure out how to take my wine on the plane and not get in trouble and have them confiscate it in security. And I came up with this idea of taking my cute little glass that I have that's acrylic. It's the Govino glasses that I like, and I have them for taking to the pool. And then, you know, you got your little one-quart baggie, and as long as it's either 3 or 4 ounces or less in each little tube or vial, you can take what you want on the plane. Didn't say it couldn't be alcohol. Your perfume has alcohol in it. I'll throw all that stuff in my check bag because I have to check a bag anyway. And I'm going to take one or two little vials or little containers of wine on the plane. So when I get there, I get out my cute little glass. I dump my little bit of wine in it. And I've got really great wine for my flight without, you know, having to either pay a fortune or drink whatever they have. And usually they don't have very good things on the plane. So that's just a little tip I got for you there of how to take your wine on the plane. But it has to go in your one-quart baggie, and it has to be, whether it's 3 ounces or 4 ounces, it has to be in that kind of size container. Otherwise, they will confiscate it going through security. The same works with the little minis. We call them the airplanes at the store because you can take those on the plane with you as long as they fit in your one-quart baggie with all your other little liquids or gels or whatever you got. One other thing is next week, we are doing our first week of distilled spirits. I'm going to give you some tips and tricks about some basics about how to order, how to start to solve those mysteries, and to tell you the difference between the different things. So, you know, we're going to talk about gin and vodka. We're going to talk about scotch and its differences between bourbon and Irish whiskey. Kind of go over all that for you as we start to move into the holidays, because sometimes people have parties or you need to gift give. And we are going to start some of those things as we start to get into the month of October. We are going to have some fun. All right. Next week, Distilled Spirits 101. Find out what it's all about. Until then. Put your tray in its serving position, grab a glass of great white wine, one of those weird ones, and a crisp salad or maybe some fish tacos, and enjoy your night. Thanks a lot.
Thanks again for tuning in. Around the World in a Glass is heard every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Please join Kimber Stonehouse from Sportsman's Fine Wines and Spirits next week for another glass.